Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Totally Driven Entertainment Radio Network.
In the future, none of you are heroes.
You're legends.
Get driven. Stay driven.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Bareback Facts. We are live, and today we're going to be talking about authoritarianism. What does it mean? How can we define an authoritarian government? How does it compare to liberalism? How does it compare to conservatism? How does it compare to libertarianism? Today we're going to discuss these things. Try to get to as much of it as we can. So bear with me today as I am juggling multiple forms of technology today. And we all know how technology and I get along. First off, let's start off with the basics. What is authoritarianism? What does it mean? How can we define an authoritarian, and how can we define authoritarianism? Let's start with an authoritarian. An authoritarian is anyone is defined as relating to or favoring blind submission to authority of or relating to or favoring a concentration of power in a leader or an elite not constitutionally responsible to the people. This is how we define authoritarianism. It is a system of government in which will favor the concentration of power in a leader or an elite not constitutionally responsible to the people. This is how we define an authoritarian government. So what kind of characteristics do an authoritarian government possess? How can we separate it from other forms of government? Let's start with what separates authoritarianism from our own form of government, which is a democracy, a representative government in which people have the power, in which the people can vote for their representatives, and the representatives act on behalf of the people. A democracy, of course, is defined as a government for the people, by the people, and of the people. It revolves around the power of the people being allowed to elect their officials who represent them, and the power of the people to remove them should they fail to represent them properly. An authoritarian government, however, is a government which signifies blind trust towards the authority. All or most, if not all, power is concentrated into the hands of one or a significantly smaller amount of people who have all the power. They have all the control. The citizens put all of their faith and trust in these individuals or individual. Most often is an individual. Now, the Oxford Dictionary defines a democracy as a system of government that is formed by whole population, eligible members through elective representatives. The Oxford Dictionary, however, defines an authoritarian regime as a government formed at the expense of personal freedom. When obedience to authority is enforced, then it is called. And any government that is formed at the expense of personal freedom, when obedience to authority is enforced, then it is known as an authoritarian government. So, what are the advantages of an authoritarian government or an autocracy? Well, the advantages of an authoritarian government are a faster process for the system. The lawmaking process is much simpler for an authoritarian regime. The dictator says it, you do it. That is the way that works, because we are on the radio. So, if you guys are having trouble listening to the show via Facebook Live, I recommend following the link on my page. It will be much better quality for you guys to listen to. That being said, this is, again, a little bit of an experiment, so we'll see how it works. Now, back to it. The majority of people in a democracy have significant more advantage for democracy. So a democracy
favors majority rule, favors the rights of the people, favors the power of voting, prevents the monopoly of authority, allows for the promotion of change, the protection of the interests of the citizens. That is the advantages of a democracy. Again, the advantages of an autocracy or an authoritarian form of government is that there are faster processes for the system in making laws. There are faster processes for the system to correct things that they think need to be corrected and to regulate things. Why? Because there is not a system of checks and balances. There is not a system in which people have to listen to, they don't have to listen to advising. They don't have to listen to a Congress or a Senate or a Parliament or what have you. So there is that for an autocracy. Now, there are some disadvantages to both. So let's start with democracy. What are the disadvantages of a democracy? Democracies can sometimes favor certain groups who have much more money can oftentimes find favor. They're able to, of course, buy candidates. They're able to lobby. It may involve more, they can involve immoral practices during elections, the misuse of public funds. And occasionally, the difficulty with democracy is that governments that are democracies oftentimes find it difficult to make decisions. This is a potentially problematic issue that we find with democracies, is that not everybody agrees on things. So because not everybody agrees on everything, it can be rather difficult for a democracy to work out in those scenarios. In an autocracy, we don't have that problem. In an authoritarian government, system of government, we don't have that issue. The authoritarian system of government doesn't allow for the personal freedoms to be a concern. No individual freedoms are given, and there is no political freedom. There is a single individual oftentimes in power. Oftentimes this is a dictator who has no interest in hearing what the political viewings of his opposition are because he doesn't care. He's not interested in hearing those things. And so he doesn't have to worry about whether or not everybody agrees because he's got all the power, and it doesn't matter if everybody agrees, because he's going to make the decisions that he wants to make at the end of the day. So this is one form of, this is one case in which we see autocracies can, quote unquote, run smoothly, because we don't have this system of checks and balances, and we don't have this system we don't have the issue of worrying about freedom of speech and the like, because there is none. So when we look at an authoritarian government versus a democracy, one of the things we do, one of the key major differences we see is the issue of majority rule. In a democracy, majority rule determines what is the law, what is going to be law, what is going to be the law of the land is determined by the majority. It's determined by the majority, by majority rule. And how is that determined? Well, the majority of the people who vote for candidates, their candidate will win, and then they would vote for the majority. The majority of people will vote for the candidates that they think are going to be the most qualified for a position. This puts people into power that likely are going to represent their interests, and in all likelihood are going to pass laws that benefit the people who voted for them. You know, this is the ideal scenario for a democracy. In an authoritarian regime, majority rule doesn't mean squat, because the authoritarian or the dictator or the king or what have you, whoever happens to be in charge, whatever title he happens to take, doesn't care what the majority of people think, because he's got all the power. So majority rule doesn't play a role in an authoritarian regime. The power of the people, the voice of the people is silent. They are going to do exactly what the authoritarian says they're going to do. Voting. The voting power resides most often in democracy in either a parliament, a Congress, a Senate, and of course in the elective, the various branches of the government, that are going to pass or veto laws will be in place to create that system of checks and balances that we love so much. In an authoritarian regime, we don't see this. There is no system of checks and balances. Again, all the power resides in one individual or a few elite individuals who make all the decisions. And so because of this, there is no voting power to speak of. Once the authoritarian takes power in a country, there is no power of the people anymore. It's the power of the authoritarian. So once that happens, you don't have any real agency among your citizens. Now we look at another key difference. Legislature size. So the size of your government in an authoritarian versus an authoritarian regime versus a democracy are going to be significantly different. In a democracy, we have a lot of moving parts. Oftentimes, the legislature is larger. There are a great number of different positions that have to be filled. There are multiple branches of government that create this system of checks and balances, and therefore the government is rather large in many cases. In the case of a democracy, it's a representative form of government. And so because it's a representative form of government, we have to have these multiple branches of government to represent the various groups. And we also are going to have certain tasks delegated to different branches of the government. So in the case of the United States government, we have a democracy in which we have a legislative branch, we have an executive branch, and of course, we have a judicial branch. The judicial branch, of course, reviews law, they pass law, the legislative branch writes laws, and the executive branch can veto laws. It can declare war with the aid of the legislative branch. So we have all these different checks and balances. They all sort of balance each other out. But this makes for a much larger government. This is one of the major issues that we have. Ted, I'm seeing that it's seeing that right now. There's really nothing I can do about that. So I'm noticing a lot of people are coming online to my Facebook feed and they're complaining that it is cutting out. But I have to tell you guys, we're on the air and there's nothing I can do about it. So you're going to have to bear with me and you're going to have to listen to the show through the link that I gave you all on my page, and we'll figure that out another time. In continuing on, another key component of authoritarian regime is the political stability. In the case of a democracy, policy tends to make for a more stable government because people have a little bit more say-so, they have a little bit more power. This allows people to feel a little bit better about their government. Sure, they may not always be happy with the way government's working. They may not be happy about it all the time. They may not agree with each other on everything. But despite the fact that they might not agree on everything, people tend to be a little bit more satisfied in democracy because they feel like they have power. They feel like they have some authority, some agency over their day-to-day life. They have some choices. They can choose who represents them. They can choose who it is that they are putting their faith in. And, of course, there is the issue of accountability. Within a democracy, there is a certain level of accountability for the representatives. They have to be they are held accountable by those who voted them in. Their constituents can hold them accountable. In the case of an authoritarian regime, there is not really any accountability. The authoritarian can do as he or she pleases, to their heart's content. They can pass laws to do basically whatever they want. Because all the power is concentrated in the hands of maybe one or two, you know, maybe most of the time, again, it's going to be most generally one. Because it's going to be concentrated in the hands of the very, very few, the people and their dissatisfaction with government is oftentimes going to cause a great deal of political strife in the country. And maybe it's not going to be open political strife, but it can oftentimes lead to a very unstable country. because a lot of people might not like the idea that they have a person in power who may ignore their interests. With a person in power who ignores your interests, you have a lot of people that are going to be rather dissatisfied with the way that their government works. In the case of a democracy, you're not always going to please everybody, but at least people have some form of say. They can say a little bit, they can talk a little bit about what they want to do. So in that case, in that regard, we have some semblance of an advantage here with democracy, in that people can find a little bit more contentment when we have a democratic government. Why? Because they have more say, they have agency, they have the ability to say what's on their mind, to speak their piece, to do and to protect their own freedoms. In a sense, they have a sense of freedom that they wouldn't have in an authoritarian government. Now, I've heard a lot of people, you know, in the past say that they felt like the government has been oppressive, that we have a dictator. I remember distinctly when Barack Obama was elected, and he began using his executive authority to do things that were perfectly, you know, within his realm and domain of doing. And yet people all of a sudden, because he was using his executive power to veto laws, which crazy that he could veto laws and then try to pass them again because that's part of his job, and well within the power of the executive branch, people began to call him a dictator. He began to say, whoa, this new president's really out of control. He's really out of hand. This president is now a dictator. He's an authoritarian, and now you see the same sort of accusations kind of being poured out against the current president. And so this is one of the reasons why I really wanted to do this for this show, talk about authoritarianism and give you guys an idea of what it's like to really live in an authoritarian form of government. So I've talked about fascism and I've talked a little bit about dictatorship, and authoritarianism is very much like these things. These are, a dictatorship and even fascism to an extent is a form of authoritarian government. The difference here is that in an authoritarian government, it is very much like a dictatorship. In fact, they're almost interchangeable. There are some slight differences that can be argued, but for the most part, by and large, an authoritarian regime is essentially a dictatorship in which one person most of the time holds all the power. And because of this, we have the issue of people not being able to feel like they can express their political views, they can express their religious views openly. Now, oftentimes, there's not really much of a difference between the economic stability of a democracy and an authoritarian regime. There are different factors which tend to play a role in the economic aspect of how a country is run by government. It just depends on how much, a great many other factors, the resources available, the workforce that you have. These sorts of things factor much more heavily into the economic stability of your country, more so than government does. Now, certain policies, of course, can affect how your economy, either thrives or does not thrive. But in the case of an authoritarian form of government versus a democracy, we have more issues with the dissatisfaction of the populace, the dissatisfaction of people versus the satisfaction of people. Now, granted, again, and as I said, I did give you guys the caveat that not everyone is going to be 100% happy all the time in a democracy. But by and large, under an authoritarian regime, the only people that are really going to be happy is the guy who's got all the power. And maybe the people who are kind of directly benefiting from the government, and I say kind of because that can change on a dime in an authoritarian government. Because one thing that we know about authoritarians or dictators is that they're never going to be content with just having a lot of power. They always feel like they've got to have more power, right? And that's just sort of the nature of the beast when it comes to an authoritarian regime. They're going to always push to get more and more power. They're going to push to get more and more mileage out of what they can take, what they can control. And what tends to happen with authoritarian regimes is that they become incredibly oppressive because most of the time, your authoritarian, your leader, your supreme overlord, what have you, whoever, however he or she identifies themselves, they tend to have problems with people who don't agree with their viewpoint, and they see this as a direct threat to their power. In a democracy, we have the benefit of being able to express our political opinions freely. We have the ability to protest actions of a government, we have the ability to remove elected officials from office by voting them out. But this is not the case in an authoritarian regime. In an authoritarian regime, once the authoritarian has the power, it is incredibly difficult to get the power back. Why is it so difficult to get the power back in an authoritarian regime? Let's take a close look at this. It is incredibly difficult to get the power back to the people from an authoritarian form of government because of a few major factors. The first factor tends to be that an authoritarian's first step is to take complete control of the armed forces. Now, of course, in the case of a democracy, the executive branch has direct authority over the armed forces, at least in our case. The executive branch, of course, is the head of the executive branch, would be the president, is often declared commander-in-chief. He has the power to command the troops to do what he desires for them to do. Now, an authoritarian, on the other hand, takes complete control of every aspect of government, and that includes your military. Military, of course, in the case of any nation, is the armed branch, of government. It is the part of the government that is meant to safeguard the nation, but it also is there to enforce its laws and to say and to safeguard not only the nation from outside threats but inside threats. And in the case of an authoritarian regime, most of the time the first threats that are going to be neutralized by an authoritarian is political opponents. Now, we saw this when the Nazis take power during the Third Reich. During the rise of the Third Reich, we have several instances in which an armed branch of the government is given the authority to take out political opponents of the rising Nazi party. In the first scenario, we have the Night of the Long Knives, in which the brown shirts go out and they find the leaders of the Communist Party in Germany and they kill them, and they dump their bodies into the Rhine. Those that they don't dump into the Rhine, they leave them with their throats cut or disemboweled in the streets. And they single out other political opponents as well, people who had the gall to speak out against the Nazis during their meteoric rise up the ranks as the most powerful party in Germany at that time. They were swift in their dealings with political opponents. And then, of course, once the Nazis take complete control of the government and Hitler is now the chancellor and has taken over with his emergency powers, he has the power of using his secret police, the Gestapo, and the, of course, his SS men to go out and enforce his will. This is a key example of how an authoritarian is able to take complete control of his government. Now, you can argue to a degree that, you know, the Nazis are not perhaps the best example of an authoritarian regime.
But there are some key aspects of the Nazis that do factor in very closely to authoritarianism, because despite the fact that, yes, there are members within the Nazi government who have significant amounts of power, really, at the end of the day, Hitler's the end-all, be-all of the Reich. He decides everything. He is the guy that everybody talks to and asks for permission to do anything. So what we have in this scenario is the quick solidification of power. This is a key component of authoritarianism. This is one of the key characteristics we can see and identify the rise of an authoritarian regime in a country, is how they quickly attempt to eradicate any and all resistance to their ideas, to their way of thinking. How do they solidify their power? Well, the first thing they do is eliminate all their political opponents. And whether that's by killing them or deporting them or imprisoning them, we've seen it time and time again. We've seen how dictators come to power, and we've seen what they do and the lengths they're willing to go to keep that power. Now we look at some, kind of contemporary examples of some of the more contemporary authoritarian regimes. We need to look no further than Mao Zedong in China. When Mao rises to power, he quickly solidifies his power using the military, and anybody who opposes him quickly finds themselves either executed or imprisoned. He heads a violent revolution, takes control of the government, and pretty much does away with anything that would be contrary to his way of thinking. The ability to gather in public is outlawed. He rounds up a lot of his political opponents and moves he pushes them all over the country to try to get them out. A lot of them die as a result of this from starvation. The rest of it don't die from starvation and famine, from his many policies of moving his population around, tend to get killed by being, killed by his troops. So Mao is able to solidify his power through two methods. The first is through revolution. After his revolution and his overthrow of the previous regime, Mao is able to eliminate many of his opponents through violence and imprisonment. He holds on to his power by inspiring his population to be incredibly afraid of him. How does he do this? How does he terrify his populace? Well, he enacts these plans for his population, these five-year plans that are designed to create his ideal society. The only problem with these plans is they tend to result in famine, and they tend to result in mass deaths, which for, most people are going to be a problem. But for him, it's okay because he's not going to experience it. But his political opponents will, and anybody who maybe even thought about opposing him in the population is going to experience them. So Mao is able to solidify his power first by eliminating his more outspoken opponents through his rise during his revolution, and then, of course, by imprisoning them once he's taken power. And then afterwards, he's able to enact several policies that allow him to systematically trim down his population and cull out the people he doesn't really want there. And if a bunch of other people who might not necessarily be involved in causing unrest get killed in the process, then at least they won't cause me problems later. So this was sort of the kind of running trend with authoritarians, with dictators, is that they don't tend to care a whole lot about their population. They care a great deal more about their and about holding on to that power, and about holding on to their power at all costs. So let's take a look at some of the other, you know, minor differences. We'll take a look first off at economic freedom and social freedom under four forms, under three other forms of government versus authoritarianism. Now, in an authoritarian regime, there really isn't any economic or social freedom. The authoritarian determines what the economic policy will be. He or she will determine what directives the economy will take. They will determine what the workforce is going to do, what they're going to produce, when they're going to produce it, how they're going to produce it, what you will be when you grow up. These are the sorts of things that an authoritarian is just obsessed with, that is just obsessed with holding on to their power. They're going to be in every aspect of your life. The other aspect of this, the social freedom, there really isn't a whole lot of social freedom, if any at all, under an authoritarian form of government. Because social freedoms mean that people can have their own ideas, their own thoughts. They could speak out if they chose to. They could protest. They could stand up for themselves if they so desired. This is not the case in an authoritarian regime. Now, if we look at the system of liberalism, a liberal form of government has little economic freedom. The government is very closely ingrained in the economy. They control a great deal of the economy. They have policies that allow them to sort of tailor the economy in the way they wish. They have more regulations. There's a great deal more social freedom. Okay, so that's what we see under the form of government, that liberalism. Under conservatism, there's a great deal of economic freedom, but social strictures, there are a great larger number of social strictures. Because conservatism tends to lean towards whoever is in power, and they're standing on morals, they're standing on what is socially acceptable, kind of becomes the norm. Excuse me. And then we have the more sort of a more even-keeled approach, which is libertarianism, which there is more economic freedom and there is more social freedom. It's kind of like the best of both worlds. Libertarianism is kind of like the Neapolitan of government. You know, you get your chocolate, you get your vanilla in there, and you get some strawberry. It's kind of like it's kind of really nice, right? It's got its strengths, it's got its weaknesses. It tries to please everybody, you know, but there's always going to be that one guy that doesn't really like strawberry. He's okay with the chocolate and vanilla, but he's not a fan of the strawberry. And so that's kind of the way you've got to view these different forms of sort of government. Is keep in mind that there's going to be some issues that are going to be some issues that we can clearly point to that separate these forms of government from one another. Let's take a look at the government in regards to economic issues in these four forms of government. Now that we have a clearer grasp of what authoritarianism is and what it looks like and how we can identify it, let's take a look at what separates it some other things that separate it. Okay, so we look at how these four different government forms approach government in economic issues and government and social issues. So libertarians, they don't really think the government should interfere in economic issues, and they don't really see the need for government interference in social issues. They kind of just believe government's kind of just hands off those things. Just stay out of there. That's none of your business. Just stay out of my house, and you know, you'll get your taxes. You just stay out of all this other stuff. Okay? Conservatism, they don't really want government interference in economic issues. They don't want the government interfering in the economy. But they're okay with government interference in social issues. They don't mind some government regulation of social issues. Liberalism favors government interference in both economic and social issues, you know, as far as protection of certain social freedoms, and as far as regulation of certain, you know, things within the economy, you know, fair trade practices and these sorts of things, making, you know, the regulation of corporations. These are things that are favored by more liberal-leaning individuals. And now we look at authoritarian, how the authoritarian would view the government in regards to economic issues and government in regards to social issues. The authoritarian would say that the government should be in control of both of those things. They should control everything. The government knows what's best for you. They're going to tell you the right things to do. So the authoritarian is going to control all these things. So that is really one of the best – that's probably one of the best ways we can break down these forms of government and how we can sort of – And how we can sort of separate it from these different forms of government. So, oftentimes people tend to think about authoritarian governments as being governments in which, you know, we have one individual who controls everything and they tell you the way things are supposed to be, but there is a little bit more to it than that. Sometimes people associate authoritarianism with religion. I know a lot of people have sort of associated, you know, religious dominance of government as sort of an authoritarian shackle. But in many cases, religion doesn't tend to play all that much of a role in authoritarianism because, again, what is religion but another means of expressing one's own freedoms, right? Our right to our ability, our power to choose what we believe in. The authoritarian form of government doesn't really allow for the flourishing of religion because religion is just another way that one could be subversive to the government. And this is something we do not want if we're an authoritarian. We don't want the government to have people questioning it. That's a problem. So here are some more characteristics of authoritarianism that can help us pick it out from various other forms of government. So number one is a limited political pluralism. That is, such regimes place constraints on political institutions and groups like legislatures, political parties, and interest groups. So what we've kind of talked about already is the idea that there are going to be limited, there's limited political pluralism. These other branches of government are now pretty much irrelevant. You don't really need legislatures and political parties and interest groups under an authoritarian because there is only one choice on the ballot. If you go to vote under an authoritarian, there's only going to be one name on the ballot. It's going to be Bob, the dictator. And you're going to vote for Bob because Bob is the only choice. Bob is the only choice you've got. So if you do have they may say they have free and fair elections, but that just means that there's going to be an election. And there's only going to be one name on the ballot, and you damn sure better choose that name because there are no other choices, so it doesn't matter if you want to choose them or not. Second is a basis for legitimacy based on emotion, especially the identification of the regime as a necessary evil to combat easily recognizable societal problems such as underdevelopment or insurgency. So there is a constant need under an authoritarian regime to fight for its legitimacy, to prove that there is a necessity for the government to have all this power. We've got to prove that the government needs to have all this power. How can we prove it? Well, there are threats to you as the citizen that only I can protect you from. Only I can protect you from the ghoulies and the ghosties. And you just have to trust me and believe in me. And I promise you, I'm not going to steer you wrong. I'm the guy that's going to get you where you need to go. So, you're just going to have to trust that I know what's best for you. That's how authoritarians tend to hold on to their power. These are the ways that they deceive the populace. They tell them, I am the only choice. I am the guy, the only one for the job that's going to be able to protect you from terrorism. That's going to be able to protect you from the enemies that surround our nation, the enemies that are within our nation that would bring us low. I am the guy that can protect you from these things. So these are two major characteristics that we can look to
when trying to identify a government as an authoritarian regime. A third characteristic we can point to is minimal social mobilization, which is most often caused by constraints on the public, such as suppression of political opponents and anti-regime activity. So under an authoritarian regime, I mentioned this before. This point comes back, circles back to what we sort of talked about when I defined authoritarianism for you guys, and that is that there isn't going to be social mobilization. And what does that mean? What is social mobilization? Social mobilization is the idea that we can gather together and band together in protest of something that we don't agree with, or in agreement with something that we do agree, you know, we can band together and support something we do agree on. Doesn't have to be disagreement every time, it could be agree. But under an authoritarian regime, there is no real opportunity for the populace to get together and say, we're not going to take this anymore, or we really like this idea, because the regime that's in control is not going to allow any perceived threats to its power. It's not going to allow any political parties to grow and form a power base within their country, because this is a threat to them. Anybody else that could potentially rise up and say, maybe I've got a better idea, is now a threat to an authoritarian regime. And because of this, you're not going to see social mobilization. You're not going to see people banding together under a dictatorship, not openly, because the authoritarian regime that is in power is not going to allow it. There's going to be moratoriums on whether or not you can gather in public. There's going to be curfews in place. There are going to be laws that limit the ability for people to gather in large numbers in places that would be easy for large numbers of people to go to. You know, public forums are not going to be allowed. And then a fourth characteristic, informally defined executive power with often vague and shifting power. So how do we navigate this? What does that mean? Informally defined executive power with often vague and shifting powers. Well, when I say an informally defined executive power, what I mean and what that means is we have no real limitation that's actually given. There's sort of laws in place that tell us what the executive's allowed to do, but they're kind of like suggestions, and we get into all these gray areas, and the whole thing gets all vague and shifty. It's like, am I abusing my power and overstepping my bounds? Under an authoritarian regime, authoritarians move incredibly quick to quickly blur the lines between how much power they're supposed to have and how far they can stretch the power that they do have. So even if they start out as limited in their power, they find a way to push the boundaries just as fast as they can. In the rise of Hitler, when he declares, oh my gosh, we need emergency powers. I've got to declare it. The communists burned down a meeting hall. That's it. I'm declaring emergency powers. It's a state of emergency. But then he never gives his power back, ever. he never says, okay, well, emergency over and it's all good. No, he stays a dictator. He pretty much just runs things from then on out. And he does this by, you know, just kind of weaseling his way in there. You know, he starts out as vice chancellor and then convinces, you know, everybody else to kind of step aside and say, listen, you know, you don't want to handle it. Let me handle these problems. Let me handle this day-to-day stuff. You don't worry about that. You just sit back and look beautiful, Papen. All right? And before people knew it, he had all the power. Because he was very quick to stretch the bounds of his power and test the limits of it. Now, modern dictatorships use an authoritarian concept most generally to form their governments. There's multiple forms of authoritarian government. We'll talk a little bit about a couple of them real quick. So we have a traditional authoritarian regimes. And these are regimes in which the ruling authority, which is generally a single person, is maintained in power through a combination of appeals to traditional legitimacy, patron-client ties, and repression, which are carried out by an apparatus bound to the ruling authority through personal loyalties. So we have an individual who takes power. They then use their authority over, you know, military personnel to brutally oppress anybody who dares threaten their power. Now we have a bureaucratic military authoritarian regime, and these are governed by, most generally, by a coalition of military officers and technocrats who act pragmatically rather than ideologically within the limits of their bureaucratic mentality. One way to look at this is to look at it from the standpoint of we have a group of military officers and technocrats who are examining the best way to make a government that is efficient, that is going to be a well-oiled machine. They're going to be thinking about things from a logical point of view. They're not going to be driven by emotion. They're going to take a more calculated approach to government. They're going to take a calculated approach to how they should handle the government, and that is how a bureaucratic military authoritarian regime is going to run. They're going to be run by a select few members of this military that take power, and they will focus predominantly on how to rationalize and develop their economy. Now, there are other three. There are, you know, three other, you know, rough sort of subtypes defined by Juan Lentz, the influential writer who sort of helped to coin the term. He was a Spanish sociologist and political scientist who essentially helped to kind of spark the start of studying this concept of authoritarianism. He theorized about authoritarianism and totalitarianism on the writings of other people, and sort of came up with his own way of formulating how this form of government works. And he broke it down into another three different small little subtypes of authoritarian regimes. So we have corporatist authoritarian regimes, and these are regimes in which corporate institutions are used extensively by the state to co-opt and demobilize powerful interest groups. Then we have racial and ethnic democracies in which we have certain racial or ethnic groups who enjoy full democratic rights while others are largely or entirely denied those rights. We can see a key example of this in South Africa during the apartheid, in which only certain members of the population had the power to vote and were even recognized as citizens, and in some cases were even recognized as people at all. And then we have post-totalitarian authoritarian regimes. These are regimes in which totalitarian institutions such as the party, secret police, and state-controlled mass media remain, but where ideological orthodoxy has declined in favor of routinization and repression has declined. The state's top leadership is less personalized and more secure, and the level of mass mobilization has declined substantially. We can point specifically to the Soviet Eastern Bloc states in the mid-1980s who were sort of transitioning out of being a part of the Soviet Union into their own sort of satellite states, which tended to be run by strong authoritarian, or dictators in many cases. This is kind of how we can identify authoritarian governments. This is what an authoritarian government looks like. It is a government in which generally one or very select few people control every aspect of life in the country. They control every aspect of day-to-day life. They control the media. They control education. They control the economy. And they control society as a whole. And that is essentially how we can define authoritarianism and what separates authoritarianism from democracy, what separates it from more liberal forms of government, and what separates it from more conservative forms of government. Ostensibly, you know, authoritarianism is about as far hardline pro-government as you can get. People who support big government are kind of treading the line between authoritarianism and conservatism. People who think that the executive branch, how can you identify an authoritarian? That's next. How do we identify someone who is an authoritarian? Because an authoritarian is not just a person who rules an authoritarian government, right? If we define an authoritarian properly, it's an individual who favors blind submission to authority, who favors the concentration of power in government to the select. They believe in the need for a strong leader. Authoritarians believe in the need of having a strong leader who controls every aspect of government, who's able to make the big boy decisions, put their big boy pants on, and make the right decisions for you and me and everybody else. That is what an authoritarian favors. They favor a government that has a strong leader who has all the power and who is not necessarily bound to a constitution. They're not playing by the rules. They make the rules. They're wearing the big boy pants, all right? They put their big boy pants on in the morning, and if they want to declare war, they do it. If they want to suspend the Constitution, they do it, okay? And a lot of people that support, a lot of people would say, well, I support a strong leader, but I don't believe I don't believe in suspending the Constitution. And to that I would say, do you really support that strong? How strong of a leader is it that you're supporting? How strong does your leader need to be? Does your leader need to have all the power? Does everyone in the country have to agree with him and be behind him 110%? Do they have to say how great he is every single day? Or is it just kind of cool to have a leader who's kind of ballsy, makes decisions, makes the hard decisions, but still respects the rights of the people, still respects, the traditions of government? Because what we have when we have an authoritarian regime and a person who is in favor of an authoritarian regime is a person who wants to generally eschew tradition. Maybe they don't like the way things were ran before. An authoritarian is a person who is not going to be finding democracy to be pleasurable to them. They are not going to be enjoying the concept of a democracy. If you're an authoritarian, you don't believe in the power of people's rights and the power of voting. You don't believe in the prevention of the monopoly of power, because an authoritarian supports the concentration of power into the hands of a few. So when we see people who claim that they want this really powerful government and they want this very powerful leader, this strong, charismatic, manly man who gets things done and doesn't take any crap from anybody, when we have people that are claiming they want this type of government, what we have are people who most often don't really understand to the full extent what they're asking for. Again, that's not to say that authoritarianism itself doesn't have its perks. If you want to live in a society in which the government controls every aspect of your life, well, that's on you. If you don't believe in individual freedoms and you believe in basically no political freedom, then authoritarianism is right up your alley. That is right there where you want to be. But I can tell you, historically, authoritarian regimes tend to not end particularly well for a lot of people. And specifically, they tend not to end very well for the person who's in charge. If we take a look at the situation in which we have, let's just take a look specifically at Italy. under the dictatorship of Benito Mussolini. Mussolini, when his government falls to pieces because the people get tired of, well, first off, they get tired of being involved in these major world conflicts. Second, they get tired of starving because the majority of his population begins starving based on all the money that he has been funneling out of their country into these other countries because Benito Mussolini was incredibly corrupt. Of course he was. But the masses, the people who he was supposed to represent, they finally rose up and they overthrew the government and they said, to heck with this, right? And, of course, this is after the Allied troops show up and kind of kick around the Italian troops. And really after that, there's really not much resistance to speak of. The Italians are kind of just relieved that Benito Mussolini's, you know, not in power anymore. But Benito Mussolini, he doesn't face execution, and he doesn't go to jail. He doesn't get in prison. He and his wife are stopped on the road by people who recognize them, and they're beaten. And they're hung in a barn. So it didn't really end very well for them. Why? Because Benito Mussolini was notorious for being incredibly oppressive. And while he did give off a, you know, this air of bravado and this air of, you know, machismo and masculinity and strength and power, he was not really a very good leader. Just because a person claims to be an incredibly powerful individual and they appear to be very powerful and they appear to be very charismatic doesn't mean they're a good leader. One might argue that Adolf Hitler was also not a very good leader, right? We have numerous examples under the Third Reich in which Adolf Hitler is kind of a crummy leader. For example, his men are not allowed to move along the Eastern Front. They're not allowed to advance against the Russian troops, even though the Russians are in full retreat in many parts of the Eastern Front. They're not allowed to advance because Hitler hasn't gotten up for breakfast yet, and he's not ready for them to advance. So no orders are allowed to be relayed to his troops without his permission. This is a huge drawback. So paranoid is Hitler that somebody else is going to steal his glory, that his troops can't take advantage of the enormous ground they're gaining on the field. This is another key. This is a key example of where we have an individual who's got all this power, who oozes all this charisma and machismo and power that people said they wanted, right? And he's kind of screwing you, right? He's not even giving you what he said he's going to give you. You know, he said he's going to bring you to the. You know, Hitler said he was going to bring on a 1,000-year Reich, and not only does it not last 1,000 years, I mean, it barely lasts 7. It's not even close. He overextends. He makes poor decisions militarily. He breaks pacts with people that would have been beneficial to him. This is one of those situations in which we look at authoritarianism and you say, really? Come on, man. Really? This is the form of government we want? A guy that has all the powers? I mean, that's not to say that there isn't the chance that one day an authoritarian dictator could come to power who would make all the right decisions. But I got to tell you, people, I'm not seeing it. I don't think it's going to happen. I'd be curious to know what anybody else thought about it. Again, the call-in number is 718-508-9883. If you've got any thoughts on it, feel free to chime in. When you look at an authoritarian form of government, there's just so much... There's just so many disadvantages compared to advantages. Sure, you can pass laws really fast, and sure, you know, you don't have to worry about checks and balances. But what's the one major thing you have to worry about? Your population, who you represent, who now has no power and has no voice in government. That's sort of a massive oversight of a dictatorship. And it's really one of the major reasons why dictatorships tend to fail. It's usually not because of outside interferences that we see dictatorships get toppled. Certainly those things can play a factor, and certainly if we look at the economic role of economics, there are many scenarios in which people, you know, when the economy starts to fall apart in these countries, people say enough's enough, we're hungry, we're tired, nobody's making any money, you're living in your palace over here, we're going to overthrow you, we're going to kill you, and we're going to take over and put somebody else in power and get the job done. generally, what tends to happen with these authoritarian governments is we have individuals in power who have all this power. They're so paranoid to hang on to it that they tend to fall apart because the people get tired of the invasiveness of the government. They get tired of having the government tell them how to think and how to breathe and how to eat and how to do everything. They get tired of such heavy regulation. And more than that, they get tired of not having a voice. They get tired of not being able to say what they think and what they feel and what they believe without fear of being ostracized, imprisoned, or executed. So this is a major downfall of authoritarianism in that because it doesn't promote individual freedom, because it doesn't promote political freedom, people tend to not stand for very long. And certainly dictators have ruled through fear. They've ruled through deception in many situations. We have countless examples of despots who have ruled through fear and through terror and through deceiving their population. But what tends to happen in almost every case is the people eventually say, enough's enough. We're the people. This is our country, and we're taking it back. And that tends to be the reason we see authoritarian regimes fall apart. Now, if we look at the flip side on democracies, if we look at a democracy, democracies tend to be longer-lasting, more stable governments. And there's a major reason why. Contentment. Now, does that mean that everyone is always going to be happy with who's the president and who's the congressman and who's doing this? And are they always going to be happy about all the laws? No. But the illusion of choice, the illusion that you have influence in your government, even the slightest shimmer of hope that you can change your government towards what you want it to look like, is more powerful than a person who sits back and says, this is the way things are going to be. This is how things are. This is how we do things. So just the fact, the power of choice is what preserves a democracy. And you see a lot of people say, that a democracy is only as strong as this. A democracy is only as strong as this or what have you. People say that democracy is only as strong as the people's faith in the democracy. The democracy is only strong as the representatives and their ability to represent the interests of the people. Well, what I would say is the democracy is only as strong as the illusion of choice that exists within it. As long as people in a democracy that are under a democracy feel like they have a choice and they feel like they have some semblance of a voice, they're likely to tolerate a lot more. Does that mean that a democracy can't be oppressive? No. A democracy can be oppressive because of majority rule, right? The majority of people, what majority of people want, may not be what small groups within the country want. Now, I know some people would say, well, who cares what those small groups of people want, right? But those small groups of people care, right? They care about what they want. That's where we tend to get lost a long way in democracy is we tend to forget that democracy is a majority rule. It's all about majority rule. It's all about who is the big cheese, who's running things. The majority rule tends to be who, everybody else voted for. And so, when we got, for example, when we got Trump as president, right, people were, there were people who were happy about it. There were people who were not happy about it. Despite the fact that, there's been protests and there's been, complaints and there's been celebrities that have come out on television and threatened to blow things up and what have you. The country didn't tear itself to pieces, right? We're still living in America. We're still living in a country where people have We're still in a country where people have, their issues. But we're still living in a country that exists, right? We're still living in a country that still has a government that's in place. There's still laws. There's not rampant lawlessness all over the country. The country's not covered in flames. There's something to be said for that. There's something to be said for, millions of us didn't die, because the president, because we got a different president. Millions of us weren't murdered and killed by the people who, felt like they won the election. Millions of us weren't murdered by people who felt like they got cheated in the election. Knock on wood, which is good stuff, right? Well, anytime we don't get murdered by the opposition is good. That's always good, right? Things could be a lot worse. In this way, we're kind of very fortunate in this way, because if we lived in an authoritarian regime, under an authoritarian regime, this show wouldn't really be possible. Social media, as we know it, would really be kind of a downer, right? I mean, we'd all be mindless sort of drones saying, "Oh, hail the supreme leader." We'd all probably wear, a gray shirt or something. I don't know. We'd all dress like stormtroopers, I guess. Might not be all that bad when you think about it, because they do have really sharp uniforms. I'm just saying. But, my Star Wars love aside, we have it pretty good. Living under a democracy, we got it pretty good. And you may not agree all the time with everybody around you, and you may not agree with the way the government's being run all the time, but that's the beauty of a democracy. You cannot agree with it. That's what's great about living in a democracy. We have the power as people living in a free democracy to say, "I don't like this guy," or "I don't like this woman," or "I don't like whoever, whatever. I don't like the way Congress is doing things. I don't like the way the president's doing things. I don't like his hair. I don't like, whatever." People have the power to say these things openly, and they're not going to get imprisoned and murdered. It's kind of a good thing. One of the things that I think we as a society have kind of, particularly here in America, is one of the things we've kind of lost over these last couple of years, and I've noticed it more and more. And this is one of the major reasons why I wanted to do this, is now when we don't agree with somebody, we just tend to throw a label on them, right? We throw a label on them. On the left-hand side, on the left, there's all this, let's just step away from that statement and let's backtrack for a moment. Now, again, we're just throwing labels at people. We're saying this guy's too left and this guy's too right. And I don't, you're just a socialist, or you're just a communist, or you're just a fascist, or you're just an authoritarian. You don't know, you're just a fascist. People just start throwing these terms around. They have no idea what they mean. They just sound bad, right? Your parents told you when you were growing up that communists were the bad guys, or the fascists were the bad guys, or the capitalists were the bad guys. So we're just going to throw these things around. And I think it's important that we take the time to step away from that for a moment and realize that before we start throwing all these titles at each other, number one, we should know what the heck they mean. And number two, isn't it really just so exhausting to really just have to insult and demean one another because we disagree with one another? Can't we disagree civilly? And the beauty of it is we could. We could if people knew what was going on, if people knew what they were talking about in many cases. We could totally disagree. And in a democracy, we don't just have the right to disagree. It's almost like we're encouraged to disagree with each other, that we're encouraged to really challenge the legitimacy of authority. We're encouraged to ask questions. We're encouraged to hold government officials accountable. We're encouraged to hold one another accountable and to debate in open forum about how we feel about things. And so in this way, we have a glorious gift. Democracy really is kind of an awesome thing.
No matter how you slice it, it's really kind of cool because we all get that voice. We all have the power to say how we feel and what's on our minds. Even now, I can tell you guys what's on my mind. And you can call in and tell me what's on your mind. It's fantastic. It's wonderful. And again, I just want to step back. You know, over these last couple of years, we've just seen people just throwing these labels around. Just throwing them around. We don't agree with the person, so we're going to attack them. We're going to demonize them. We're going to try to make our – we're going to yell real loud, and the louder we yell, the more right we're going to be. And I don't mean right politically. I mean the more correct we're going to be. Our point is going to be the good one, and theirs is going to be the bad one. It's just have to yell really, really loud, and then it'll be – and then I'll be correct, and you'll be wrong. What I would like to do is kind of encourage you guys out there that are listening to take the time to not only go look into things for yourself and find out what terms actually mean before you use them, particularly this one, authoritarian, is kind of a serious term. I saw a lot of people saying that now we're living under a dictatorship, that now Trump is an authoritarian. He's a dictator. He's ruling everything with an iron fist, but he's not. You know, you don't have Gestapo knocking down your door yet. And holy crap, if I get Gestapo knocking down my door after this and you guys never hear from me again, just know that whatever they said I did, I didn't do. But seriously, jokes aside, we're not seeing that yet. People are out there saying, oh, we have a dictator now. Look at him. He's doing whatever he wants. He just does what he wants to do. He's changing the laws. But, I mean, he's really not changing the laws. He's kind of just acting within the executive body. Are there some things that have happened that, you know, everybody, that I agree with and don't agree with? Of course there are. Of course there are things that have happened since the new president's been elected I don't like. There are things that I kind of said, you know what, that's not really that bad. You know, you can't win them all. But that's the beauty of a democracy, guys. You can elect these officials, and if you don't like them, don't worry. Sooner or later, some guy's going to get in there, some gal's going to get in there that you do like, and everybody that you knew that liked that guy before is going to hate that person, and then you get bragging rights for the next 4 years or 8 years or whatever. But before we start throwing around that so-and-so's a dictator, we need to really understand what a dictatorship is like, what an authoritarian regime really is like, because you're definitely not living under one right now. You're not living under an authoritarian regime right now. If you're in America, you're an incredibly fortunate individual. And I don't want to dive down the path of American exceptionalism and talk about how amazing America is and all that stuff. That's not really necessary or relevant to our conversation. What I want to say, though, is that you do need to understand that you are incredibly fortunate to be living in a country that has a democratic form of government, that has a representative form of government, that has a constitution in place that preserves your rights to disagree or agree or be irrelevant or not care either way. So, we are incredibly fortunate that we don't live under an authoritarian regime, because if we did, if we lived under an authoritarian regime, we wouldn't be having these investigations with, you know, guys like Comey coming on television talking with the Senate, Senate Review Board. We wouldn't have the president meeting with different branches of the government. It wouldn't be happening because the president wouldn't be meeting with anybody, because he'd just be sitting in his office making decisions. And then he'd come on TV and say, here's the law. This is what we're doing now. From now on, this is what we're doing. I am the law. Hang up. Done. No more speech. I mean, that is not what you live under right now. Everybody that's been out there saying, oh, my gosh, we're under a dictatorship now. I've got no freedoms. That's just preposterous. That's just ridiculous talk. You know, don't sit around and cry about it. If you don't like it, if you don't like the government you have in place right now,
If you don't like the representatives, there's a really good solution for it. Next time it's election time, representatives at the state level and the local level, you go to the polls and you vote those guys out. And then when it's time for election time at the state level, or at the, I should say, the federal level, well, you go to the polls and you vote those guys out. That's the beauty of a democracy. If we were living in an authoritarian government, people, there is no voting them out. You're not voting out anybody. If our new president was a dictator, you could kiss all this stuff goodbye. All this voting people out and protest, all the protests we do, all the celebrities that come on and take off their shirts and talk about how they hate, you know, the White House and want to make it go away, and all the people that come out and cut off paper mache heads of presidents and cut off, you know, whatever, all the Kathy Griffins, all these people that are out there doing the things that they're doing, they would not be able to do those things in an authoritarian regime. If we lived in a dictatorship, an authoritarian form of government, that would have been an executable offense. You would have never heard another thing from Kathy Griffin. She would have been killed, probably would have been lined out in front of a firing squad and shot. And no, I'm not advocating for that in any way, shape, or form. But I'm trying to impress upon everybody that you don't really have it that bad. You may not like who's president. You may not like who your senator is. But that's why you take your happy buns to the polls when it's time to vote, and you vote them out. Because guess what, my little darlings? You live in a democracy. And part of a democracy, one major defining factor that separates a dictatorship or an authoritarian government, however you want to slice the apple, from a democracy, one major tidbit separates democracy from authoritarianism: the responsibility of the citizen. The responsibility of the citizen. We don't talk about that enough. As Americans, we don't talk about the responsibility of the citizen. We talk about the pride of the citizen. We talk about what the government's supposed to do for you. But what about your responsibility as a citizen? You have a responsibility as a citizen to be informed, to know who you're voting for, to be educated, to know the issues, to know your own values, to know what's important to you specifically, and to know what candidates and what representatives you have embody those things. And if you don't know those things, if you don't know what candidates that are running for office embody the things that you stand for as an individual, and you go to the polls and you vote, then who you get in office is your fault. Because you didn't take the time as a citizen to fulfill your responsibility as a citizen to inform yourself and to make educated choices. That's what separates, one major key component that separates democracy from authoritarianism: the responsibility of the citizen. In an authoritarian form of government, the citizen not only has no freedom, but responsibility is absolved from the citizen, because the citizen has no choice in who is in charge, and because the authoritarian or dictator has all the power, it doesn't really matter what the citizen wants. But in a democracy, in the form of government that we have, which is more or less a democratic republic, you don't have that luxury, if you will. You are responsible as a citizen to make the right choices. You as a citizen are responsible for educating yourself on issues. You're responsible for educating yourself on the stances of the people running for office. You're responsible for knowing how you align with their views. And you're responsible for knowing what representatives that are running for public office are going to best represent your interests. So when we talk about the major differences between a democracy and an authoritarian government? The major difference, the most important major difference, is the responsibility of the citizen. I'm Dallas Duclo. This has been the Bareback Facts, and I will catch you all later. Enjoy the rest of your weekend. Thanks for tuning in.